All right, brand new system and chapter, of course. The chapter is about, well, the chapter title is the lymphatic and immune systems, which I kind of don't like the title of because it implies that those are two separate organ systems when actually only one of those is truly an organ system. The lymphatic system is an organ system officially. It's one of the several that are in the body. But there's, even though we use the phrase immune system, there is no organ system called the immune system. And also, what we refer to as the immune system, which is structures and function, it's not actually just a subset of the lymphatic system. Kind of, you know, like cardiovascular was just part of the circulatory, but it was entirely within the circulatory system. That's not true for the immune system. The immune system really just refers to the way various tissues and cells operate or function for the purpose of immunity, for protecting you against things that can do you harm. So it's not an organ system. It's discussed in the chapter along with the lymphatic system because as far as where these various tissues are that operate for immunity are located, it's mostly in the lymphatic system. But there are immune tissues and cells scattered throughout most of the body's organ systems, not just one of them. So I wanted to clarify that first. The immune stuff is really later on in the chapter. Let's start with the lymphatic system as an organ system. And the lymphatic system, I would guess, is the organ system that if you went out in the street and polled people and just said name an organ system, lymphatic system would probably be the one that most people forget. Or that you would probably have the fewest people say lymphatic system if they just chose one. It's one that day to day we kind of forget about. You know, you're breathing hard from activity. You think of your respiratory system or your circulatory system. Integumentary system's hard to forget because it's what you really feel mostly, right? Or it's what you feel with as well, and so on. But the lymphatic system, actually, a lot of people in the general probably don't even realize that we have a whole separate system of vessels besides our blood vessels. Everyone knows we have blood vessels, even without taking an anatomy class, but a lot of people probably don't even realize that we have this whole other set of tubes in our body that is very important to have for reasons I discussed in the last chapter, actually. So let's talk about the overall three big functions of the organ system that we call the lymphatic system. One of those, and that's what we've already discussed, is the reclamation of fluid or the return of fluid that has been lost from the blood to the bloodstream. So we talked in the last chapter about why fluid gets squeezed out of capillaries, and we also said that a large fraction of that stuff that gets squeezed out of the capillaries actually returns to the capillaries, right? Directly. What fraction did I say roughly? Gets returned? Yeah, about 85%. So by far, most of the fluid that leaves through the various spaces in the capillaries gets reclaimed immediately by the capillaries. And that's because of what we were talking about at the end of last time. It's because there is a tendency for outward flow of fluid at the arterial end of a capillary because hydrostatic pressure is higher than colloid osmotic pressure. But then at the venous end, it's reversed. Colloid osmotic pressure is actually greater than hydrostatic pressure because hydrostatic pressure, which is the blood pressure, has been drastically reduced by that time you're at that end of the capillary, and that's because of the great amount of friction that occurs in the capillaries themselves. So that's what brings it back in, but only most of it. Yes, 85% is a big chunk of it, but 15% is still outside of the circulatory system. And that's the problem, right? That can't continue indefinitely because you would eventually leak all of your blood out. That would lead to what condition? Edema, which is swelling of the tissues because of fluid accumulation. So that is one of the three major functions of the lymphatic organ system. It reclaims that fluid that's lost from the capillaries. But it doesn't do so by putting it back into the capillaries. The fluid that goes back into the capillaries is, that's the business of the circulatory system, not the lymphatic system. And that's because of these pressure differences that I just talked about. There has to be a different route for the fluid to be returned to the bloodstream. And that different route is through the various tubes that make up the lymphatic system structurally. The lymphatic system is more than just vessels, but there are lymphatic vessels of various sizes that pick up this fluid that was originally in the blood and is leaked out, and that fluid gets returned to the bloodstream. So the plumbing of the lymphatic system, that system of vessels, connects directly to blood vessels. All right? But there is circulation of blood, right? It goes over and over around in circles in these circuits that we talked about. The lymph, which is the fluid, which is what we call the fluid that gets lost from the bloodstream, the lymph does not circulate in the lymphatic vessels. It's a one-way trip. The fluid that's lost from the bloodstream enters at one end of these tubes, and it all takes a one-way trip and gets dumped back into the bloodstream. Doesn't therefore circulate. That is a major function of the lymphatic system. Well, another one you probably already guessed, which is immunity. Because so much of the tissue and populations of cells that work for immunity are actually in organs or structures of the lymphatic system, that is a major function of the lymphatic system, immunity. Not so much these vessels I've already talked about, but there are, in addition to the lymphatic vessels, which we'll talk about in detail in a minute, there are lymphatic organs as well. And those organs house a lot of these populations of cells and tissue that function for immunity. And then there's a third major function, which is to pick up some of what we eat. All right, now the organ system that does the majority of this job of picking up stuff that we actually absorb from our food is what? Which system? Digestive system, yes. So what I'm talking about is food, it doesn't enter the body, right? Food enters the tube that our body surrounds. I've talked about this several times. That food gets broken down into individual molecules that make up the bigger molecules that are in food, right? So you don't, not only do you not take in food into your body, you don't also take in proteins, for instance. Proteins are not absorbed into the body. Instead, they are dismantled into the things that they're made out of, right? Which are what? Amino acids. And similarly, polysaccharides are not taken into the body. They are broken down into monosaccharides, which are then absorbed. Nucleic acids are broken down into nucleotides. Well, those three classes of nutrients, which are the three polymers, right? once they're digested into their monomers, that gets absorbed into the bloodstream. And so that's a function of the digestive system that we'll talk about when we get there. But the lipids that come in from the food don't actually go directly into the bloodstream like the rest of them do. Instead, they are picked up by a special population of lymphatic vessels that happen to be right around the small intestine, right where those capillaries are that absorb the other kinds. There are specialized lymphatic vessels called lacteals. And their job is to absorb the lipids from the digested food. Now, it's not to say that these will never make it into the bloodstream, because anything you put into the lymph stream is going to be dumped into the bloodstream, right? It just doesn't go in directly through intestinal capillaries, blood capillaries. It goes in through lacteals. So that's the third major function of the overall organ system. The organ system structurally consists of different kinds of lymphatic vessels, which we'll talk about. There are size classes to them, just like there are for blood vessels. But also there are lymph nodes. There are lymph nodules. And there are various kinds of lymphatic tissue. And lymphatic tissue is spread out in various areas. It can be concentrated in an organ or just be diffuse patches here and there. Importantly, though, the organ system also includes the lymph itself. That fluid is part of the lymphatic organ system, just like blood is part of the circulatory system. The spleen is also part of this organ system, and that's labeled here. And we've talked a little bit about the spleen in terms of breakdown of old, worn-out red blood cells, but we'll talk about other things the spleen does in a little bit. You see that there are all these green tubes are lymphatic vessels of various sorts, but the bean-like enlargements, these green blobs here and there, are lymph nodes. And there are hundreds of these in the body. I think probably about roughly 400 in an average human. And they are hollow, at least partially hollow. They're like very wide, very large widenings of the vessels that connect to them. So as lymph is flowing through the lymphatic vessels, every now and then it will get to a very wide place, which is the lymph node. And so as lymph is traveling, as it hits a lymph node, what do you think is going to happen to the speed of that lymph? It's going to slow down, just like a river slows down when it widens. This is good because it gives a chance for the various kinds of cells that are in these lymph nodes to function for immunity, to deal with things that the lymph is carrying, including bacteria and other pathogens and all kinds of things that really shouldn't be in your body. Those get collected along with the fluid that leaks out of the bloodstream. Those actually end up getting put into the lymph as well. And that's why here and there along this highway you have these, not stops, but slowdown points called the lymph nodes. Okay, that's the basic architecture. Let's go to slide 2 and look at a couple pictures of lower limbs, specifically legs. This just shows you how drastic edema can be. Shows you the importance of having a functional lymphatic system. If you didn't have the lymphatic system, or even if, in this case, this person, of course, has a lymphatic system, but it's not operating properly, It's not reclaiming this 15% of the fluid that's being that's staying outside of the bloodstream. And so that adds up over time and can kill you, which is why it's, even though it's kind of a forgotten organ system, the lymphatic system, like any other organ system, is indispensable. Now to three. Well, in this cartoon version, we're seeing a close-up of some very, very small vessels. Obviously, these are small because you already know how small blood capillaries are. They're microscopic. Well, in almost all tissues of the body, there are lymphatic vessels in addition to blood vessels. There are some places where there aren't lymphatic vessels, including the central nervous system, brain and spinal cord, don't have them. You don't have them in the cornea. You don't have them in the bones. But most places have lymphatic vessels in addition to blood vessels. And just like blood capillaries are the smallest of the blood vessels, the smallest of the lymphatic vessels are the lymphatic capillaries. All right? Now notice that a lymphatic capillary is wider than a typical blood capillary. That's one difference. Another huge difference, though, is that a lymphatic capillary is blind-ended. Right? Notice that each one of these just ends. It's a dead end. Actually, it's not really correct to call it a dead end. You should call it a dead start in terms of flow. Because these little fingertips that you see here in green, that's where the fluid that doesn't get back into the bloodstream accumulates into these blind-ended pouches called the lymphatic capillaries. And this just goes hand in hand with what I already told you. Lymph does not circulate. If it circulated, we would have a circuit of tubes. There would not be any blind ends to it. But I say blind beginning because of the directionality of the flow. This is where the fluid comes in. And that's what the black arrows are trying to indicate. Well, they are, even though lymphatic capillaries, of course, or lymphatic vessels in general, are carrying lymph instead of blood, functionally, they're very much like veins. And in fact, histologically, they're very much like veins. Meaning that the bigger ones, not the capillaries, but the bigger lymphatic vessels are built pretty much like veins, like with respect to having a tunica media and so on. But functionally, they operate like veins because they are returning fluid somewhere, right? Which means that they converge, they don't branch. So smaller ones converge into bigger ones, which then converge with other bigger ones to make even bigger ones, and so on. And so there are size classes of lymphatic vessels, which we'll look at when we're looking at the picture, just like there are for veins. But right now, what we're looking at here is a capillary, and the bottom one is a close-up of just one of these starting points that is closed at the end, or at the tip, I should say, because, like I say, this is really of the beginning. And if you look at this closely, you can see that just like blood capillaries, there are spaces in lymphatic capillaries, but actually much more so in lymphatic capillaries than in blood capillaries. Now, this should make sense to you. There's two reasons why lymphatic capillaries are full of holes. One is that there is no lymphatic heart, right? These things are reclaiming fluid that has been squeezed out of the bloodstream. Well, that stuff, that lymph, which we officially call it lymph after it's already out of the bloodstream. So it's lymph really before it even gets into the lymphatic vessels, the lymphatic capillaries. It's still in the interstitium. that's not at very high pressure, right? Very low pressure. So you need to make it very easy for this stuff to get into the lymphatic capillaries. And therefore, there are little flaps, basically. Endothelial cells make up the walls of the lymphatic capillaries, just like they do for blood capillaries. But in lymphatic capillaries, you have an overlapping arrangement. Which you see right here, this is one endothelial cell, this is another one, and they overlap like this. With a directionality of that overlapping, by the way. Well, that's easy to separate those two cells. They're not connected to each other, really. Therefore, if there's just the slightest bit of pressure in the buildup because of tissue fluid accumulating in the tissues, it will open this flap up, and that fluid will go into the lymphatic capillary. On the other hand, if there's a lot of buildup of fluid in the lymph in the lymphatic capillary, that's going to close that flap. So it acts as little valves and ensures that the lymph enters the lymphatic capillary. And if there is a buildup of pressure, instead of it just coming back out into the interstitium, it's going to push the valves closed and therefore propel the lymph on its way eventually back toward the bloodstream. But in any case, it would be a forward movement of lymph through the lymphatic vasculature. That all make sense? That's one major reason why there's a lot of holes in lymphatic capillaries. The other is that it's not the only job of the lymphatic system to reclaim that lymph, like I said. I said that another major function of the system as a whole is immunity. So, cells that should not be there, bacteria mostly, but other kinds of pathogenic cells, or just not only pathogenic, cells that even of your own cells, defective cells of your own, cancerous cells, for instance, anything that really shouldn't be there, can also get into these large holes. We're talking about cells, which are much bigger than proteins, which are usually locked in a blood capillary, right? Well, that's why you have to have these big holes so that these bacteria and other things that shouldn't be there in there get in the lymph as well, because that lymph is going to go and it's going to eventually go back to the blood stream, like I said, but on the way it's going to go through these lymph nodes, which are places where the cells of various types that should not be in your body are dealt with for the purpose of immunity. All right, so that's why I don't want to say they're leaky, because it's the opposite of leaky, right? They're full of holes so that fluid can come in, not out. Okay, let's go to 4 now. Well, in this picture, we're looking at a bigger lymphatic vessel now. Lymphatic vessel is the phrase we give to any of the size classes. So a lymphatic capillary is a lymphatic vessel, and so are all the other ones that I still haven't really talked about. But this one happens to be the next size class up, which are collecting vessels, which are called collecting vessels. And they're like the veins are compared to the venules. Remember that when we looked at veins, we saw that they had internal valves in them formed by flaps. Same thing in lymph, and for, of course, exactly the same reason. Lymph is not pressurized by a heart, so it has very low pressure. And therefore, to ensure the unidirectional flow of that lymph toward the bloodstream, there needs to be valves to disallow backflow. So what is the source of force that propels lymph through the lymphatic vessels? Well, one is that there is a continual accumulation of it at one end, at the lymphatic capillary. So the more you add there, that's going to slightly pressurize it, right? At the same time, you're taking away lymph at the other end. When it's dumping it back into the bloodstream, you're removing it there. So that contributes to the overall one-way flow. But what else would help? Same thing that helps in blood circulation through the veins. Skeletal muscle pump, exactly. One of the many reasons why exercise is important. Squeezing of these skeletal muscles will squeeze on veins, blood veins, but also will squeeze on collecting vessels of the lymphatic vasculature and push lymph along. It'll try to push it in both directions, just like in a blood vein, but the flaps that are serving as valves will not allow it to go backwards, and therefore it'll be propelled forward. Now to five. Here we can finally get a look at the major size classes of lymphatic vessels. We've already talked about the smallest ones, and we start with the smallest ones because this is not a circuit. This is a one-way flow, and that's where the flow starts, at the capillaries that we just talked about. That's where the fluid comes in through these flap-like holes in the walls because of the overlapping of the endothelial cells. So there are, just like blood capillaries are microscopic, lymphatic capillaries are microscopic, there's an untold number of them spread out throughout the body. As you see in the cartoon here, they are situated in capillary beds right beside capillaries, not surprisingly, right? It's the capillaries that are losing the fluid that gets reclaimed by the lymphatic capillaries. Well, anyway, they converge into larger tubes, and the next size class up, like I said, are called collecting vessels. And collecting vessels here and there, spaced irregularly, will lead to lymph nodes. So a lymph node is not like an exit on a highway. It's just kind of like suddenly going to 20 lanes instead of one. And so that's where the lymph really slows down while it's in there, giving a chance, and we'll look at the lymph nodes in detail later, but that gives a chance for all these things that have accumulated in the lymph that shouldn't be there that can hurt you, gives a chance for the population of immune functioning cells in the lymph nodes to do their job. But collecting vessels converge into bigger and bigger collecting vessels, but eventually you get to even the next bigger size class, which are trunks, lymphatic trunks. And those are the next to the biggest. Lymphatic trunks then finally converge into two major collecting ducts. I shouldn't say two major, two exactly collecting ducts. The collecting ducts, in other words, are the largest lymphatic vessels. So it goes lymphatic capillaries, collecting vessels, lymphatic trunks, lymphatic ducts. And it should make sense to you because of the convergence that there are fewer and fewer of them as you go through each class. So you get to only two collecting ducts. Now, there only one of those is shown here. And notice that it... Oh, go ahead.
Is the nodes included in that between vessels and trunks?
The nodes are in collecting vessels, and there might be a few in trunks as well, but not in the ducts. Notice where this, what we're looking at here is what? The right side or the left side? The right. It's right. Yes. We see the right collecting duct right here, but there's also a left one. That's why there are two. And notice that this collecting duct is emptying directly into the subclavian vein. And this subclavian vein is, why is that called that? Have you guys studied the vasculature in the lab yet? So you should know the meaning of subclavian. It means below what? The clavicle, right. So there's a right and a left subclavian vein. That's where the two, right and left, lymphatic collecting ducts empty directly into. They connect directly to those subclavian veins. And so that, in terms of the flow of lymph, that's the end of the line. The stuff that's flowing into the bloodstream is no longer lymph. Now it's back to being part of the blood. And that's what I meant by the unidirectional flow. It doesn't form a circuit. It's a one-way trip. Well, why, if you think about this from a design perspective, of course, the collecting ducts emptying directly into the subclavian veins makes sense from a design perspective, or just from an evolutionary perspective, which is how it really happens. Why? Why does it make sense to dump this stuff into subclavian veins? Or not, maybe not specifically subclavian veins, but why does it make sense to dump it into large veins? No, it doesn't ever actually have anything to do with oxygen. Well, what if you connected the collecting ducts to the aorta and the pulmonary trunk instead? It would push all that lymph backwards, right? And in fact, blood would enter the lymphatic vasculature instead of going to the body and to the lungs. You would die. So, what am I after here? Why does it make sense to dump the lymph into large veins? Well, it is going to the heart, but it's not really important that it's going to the heart before anything else. The point here is that the lymph is already at very low pressure. If you're going to dump that into somewhere else, that somewhere else needs to be also very low pressure. Well, veins in general have lower pressure than arteries, right? And the larger the vein, meaning the closer you are back to the heart, the lower the pressure in that vein. Now, technically, the lowest pressure would be in the superior and inferior vena cava, but the subclavian veins are very close to that. They're almost all the way back to the heart. And therefore, that's where the connection is made between the lymphatic vasculature and the blood vasculature. That makes sense? Okay, that's the major point of that slide. Let's go to 6 now. In 6, we see some structures I haven't talked about. One point of this is that we can see the names of the major kinds of trunks. There, as you see listed here, there are, and there's a right and left version of almost all of these, all but one. But there are jugular trunks, not surprisingly, in the neck, right? Which is where the jugular veins are. That's what that means. Jugular trunks, couple down from that, you have subclavian trunks. And so these are named just for the parts of the body that they drain, right? They're draining it of lymph, though, instead of blood. So there's right and left subclavian trunk. There's also bronchiomediastinal trunks. Now, what does that mean? Bronchiomediastinal means what? What does it drain? What does the bronchio part refer to? Lungs. Lungs are made up of bronchioles. And mediastinal? It's the adjective of what noun? Mediastinum, exactly. So the lungs and the stuff between the lungs, all the stuff that's in the mediastinum gets drained of lymph through the two bronchiomediastinal trunks. You also have lumbar trunks, or actually, before I forget to show it, because I don't think they're in this picture, there are also intercostal trunks, meaning between the ribs, that drain the surface of the chest and back. And like I said, there are lumbar trunks, which are named for the lumbar region, the lower region of the back, but the lumbar trunks also drain the lower appendages. And an intestinal trunk, only one. So the intestinal trunk, of those 6 kinds of trunks that I just named, the intestinal trunk is the only one that's not paired. And can you guess what gets drained by the intestinal trunk? The intestines, yes. So there's no right and left version of that, but there is for all the other five. Now, one thing we haven't talked about is this large patch right here called the cisterna chyli. Well, cisterna is just the Latinized word for cistern, but what is a cistern? A cistern is a tank. Like, people that live away from a city will have a cistern for their water, for instance. Cisterna chyli is called this because the chyli part of this refers to chyle. C-H-Y-L-E. Chyle is the name of the lymph that is in these lacteals I talked about. So most lymph from the rest of the body, lymph is different in appearance. It's mostly, in terms of volume, just very similar to plasma, because that's what has leaked out. Except instead of having the plasma proteins in it, because they were locked in the bloodstream, it's really more like serum, or even less, even more watery than serum, because those albumins, those globulins, those various plasma proteins we talked about are too big to get through the holes in the capillaries. So it's just the liquid part of the plasma, the solvent part, that is what makes up the bulk of most lymph in most places in the body. There's also foreign cells and so on mixed in there as well. But in the lymph that's being collected from the intestine and therefore making its way, I mean, I'm talking about it, capillaries at first, but it's the stuff that will make its way toward the intestinal trunk on its way back to the bloodstream. That lymph is different in appearance and consistency. It is looks a little bit like milk. What makes it look milky? This is, by the way, is why these are called lacteals. Those intestinal lymphatic capillaries are called lacteals, I said. Well, it's the same root as in lactation, meaning milk. Right? Lactose, milk sugar. Anyway, what is it that makes the lymph that's being drained from the intestines milky in appearance? The lipids, exactly. The lipids that are coming in from the food you eat, like I said, those don't get absorbed into the bloodstream directly, they get put into these lacteals, and that makes that particular lymph milky in appearance. It's definitely not milk, but it makes it look milky. And therefore, even though it is lymph, we call that particular lymph chyle. All right? And therefore, cisterna chyli, which is an enlargement in the system of tubes, because there's a lot of convergence there into this intestinal trunk, that just literally means the chyle tank. All right? That takes care of this upper part. Let's talk about this bottom, though. I said that there are two collecting ducts, a right and a left, that empty directly into the right and left subclavian veins, respectively. But notice that, kind of surprisingly, the two collecting ducts do not share equal job with respect to how much lymph they reclaim from the body. You would think if there's a right and a left version that the right one would collect from the right half of the body and the left one from the left half of the body. That's not what actually happens, though. And that's the idea here behind the shading that you see in the picture on the lower right. Notice that only about a quarter of the lymph is collected eventually by the right collecting duct and return to the right subclavian vein. The other three quarters gets collected by the left collecting duct and is dumped into the left subclavian vein. So half the right side of the head, the right side of the chest, the right upper limb, and that's about it. That goes into the right subclavian vein via the right collecting duct. Everything else makes its way eventually to the left collecting duct and gets put into the left subclavian vein. All right, let's go to 7. Here we're looking at a close-up view of a macrophage. And macrophage's job is what? To eat cells that shouldn't be there, right? So macrophages are phagocytic cells that eliminate various kinds of cells that shouldn't be there. Either it's because they're non-self cells, like bacteria, for instance, or anything else that shouldn't be there, like a cell from another human. This is why this is part of tissue rejection, for instance. Macrophages will engulf those cells because it recognizes that it's not part of you. Also, some of your own cells. When your own cells turn cancerous, which they're doing all the time, even though you don't have cancer yet, those will be engulfed by macrophages. So these are important cells for immunity. And they are part of a collection. These macrophages are part of a collection of lymphatic cells. It's just one of several types of lymphatic cells. There are also, and we've talked about some of these already, along with macrophages, lymphatic cells include natural killer cells. And I think we mentioned these before. Natural killer cells are really very large versions of lymphocytes, but they specialize in using various ways to kill cells that shouldn't be there. They kill bacteria, but they also kill other kinds of cells, cancer cells and so on. In addition to those two, you have other kinds of lymphocytes, including B lymphocytes, or B cells as they're sometimes called. B lymphocytes are really important in immunity. B lymphocytes produce, they do various things, but they secrete antibodies. And antibodies are important in immunity, and we'll talk more about antibodies later. You also have T lymphocytes, or T cells. T lymphocytes are also important in immunity. All these are really important in immunity. But T lymphocytes are, first of all, they're called T lymphocytes because the T stands for thymus, and that's where they mature. We've already talked about that a little bit in the one of the other chapters. In case you're curious, the B cells, the B lymphocytes, are named for the place in chickens where they were discovered, which is the bursa of Fabricius. So the B stands for the bursa of Fabricius, which is an eponymous name for something that we don't even have. But anyway, that's the idea behind the B. But B cells mature in bone marrow, and we've already talked about those. The T cells are important, immunity-wise, T cells are important as antigen-presenting cells. There are several different kinds of antigen-presenting cells, or APCs. Antigen-presenting cells, as the phrase tells you, will recognize an antigen as some foreign material, and they will take it into themselves, take it into the cell, but embed it then into the plasma membrane, sticking outwardly. They're presenting it to other cells of the immune system, saying this stuff is here that shouldn't be here. And there's different kinds of antigen-presenting cells. There are also reticulocytes, which are important for forming framework within lymph nodes and other organs of the lymphatic system. And we'll see these other kinds of cells as we look at organs in detail. But the macrophage shown here, just one kind of major lymph cell. Okay, now in 8, the close-up here is of a lymphatic nodule, as you see. Now, lymphatic nodules are not lymph nodes. A lymphatic nodule is much smaller than a lymph node, but very similar word, so be careful with that. Well, actually, nodule just means small node, right? But that's a little deceiving because a lymphatic nodule is not really just a small version of a node. A lymphatic nodule actually can be found in a lymph node. A lymphatic nodule is a collection of cells that are working for the purpose of immunity various ways. So a lymphatic nodule is made up of lymphatic tissue. But in addition to appearing in lymph nodes, lymphatic nodules are also spread out through other parts of the body. You find lymph nodules in various places that are potential entry points of invaders into your body. So at mucous membranes, for instance, openings of the body, digestive system, skin, these are places where you find collections of cells that are operating for immunity because they're potential inroads for bacteria and other pathogens. This one happens to be in the tissue that lines the digestive tract. These are intestinal villi, as you see. Each villus is made up of many cells lining that surface of that villus. And those are the cells that are functioning to absorb the nutrients that have already been digested in there. But underlying that, away from the food tube, are these collections of cells operating for immunity. And we call those collections that you can see histologically lymphatic nodules, whether they're in lymph nodes or not. When we look at a close-up, though, later of lymph nodes, well, there are also several lymph nodules in, or lymphatic nodules in each lymph node. So the, as far as cells are concerned, they are a collection of the cell types I just mentioned, more or less, working to protect you. I guess I better stop there. Yeah, we'll stop there.